I'm Tass Mellis of The Starters.
This is Ben Golver with the Open Floor Podcast.
Hi, I'm Kristen Ludlow from NBA Inside Stuff.
I'm OG Anunoby of the Toronto Raptors.
Hey, I'm Elena Deladon, and welcome to the Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Double Clutch Podcast. I'm Mike Miller. As you can see, I'm joined by the OG from the OG Valley. It's Hugh Hopkins. How you doing, bud?
I'm very well. Happy St. David's Day, everybody, especially to Steve Nash.
Yeah, okay, fair.
He's part Welsh. I'm claiming him. Or a quarter Welsh.
So he's Canadian. He was born in South Africa. Yeah, hold on. Your half to a quarter is a pretty quick drop off.
I mean, shut up.
Are you even sure there's any link at all?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was something like he was born in Wales, or maybe like his grandfather was born in Wales. Or his auntie or something. There's a link somewhere.
Okay, fair enough. I'll let you off with that. And as you can see, we're joined by a very special guest, the man recently appointed to the role that every UK NBA fan dreams of having. It's Sky Sports NBA lead, Kyle Picknell. How are you doing, Kyle? Welcome to the show.
I'm very good, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Although I'm not sure about intro now. I'm a public enemy by the sounds of it.
A public enemy? No.
Yeah. Is it stealing the dream job of the people?
Winning the dream job.
It's
not that kind of community at all.
No.
Awesome. Well, welcome to the show. And finally, as always, sat at the back of the bus with all the cool kids, the man making the magic happen, it's Kurt Killick.
Yeah, welcome.
He waved on camera. He did actually give us some noise. Brilliant. Cheers. Okay. So thank you to everyone for tuning in and for listening back on whatever you're listening to. If you're not already, please make sure you are following us at Double Clutch UK on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. We've got a Discord. Come and join that. It's a lot of fun in there. Discord.me/Double Clutch. And of course, if you're not watching this live on Twitch right now, you can every Monday, 9 p.m. English time, GMT, and then we'll switch to BST when that happens, whatever. That's this month, isn't it? Twitch.tv/DoubleClutchUK. We've got a huge amount of things to get through in the little time we have each week, but we're going to start with a little bit of get to know Kyle. But it's a nice get to know. Don't worry. Don't panic. So let's start off. Obviously, we said what your new role is. Tell everyone what your new role entails for you.
So essentially, I'll be in charge of Sky Sports NBA coverage and our output on the website, on social media, all that kind of stuff. I've been working with Hugh a bit already. He's wrote some great features for us. So I'm just, essentially trying to bring as much of that as possible. I'm a writer originally, so it's a new role for me in terms of kind of, you know, being an editor and kind of social media manager and all these kind of different balls to juggle. But I'm really excited about it. And it's been a month now, and I feel like I've made a pretty good start. So there's more to come. That's what I will say.
I was going to ask about that, because it is an all encompassing role. Like, have you managed to sleep much in the past month?
Good question. I never really slept much to begin with. So nothing's really changed on that front. Like all basketball fans in the UK, you know, sleep kind of comes second. So that's just how it is.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Until you get a child, and then sleep kind of comes second to the child, but the NBA gets bumped to third and you end up doing stupid things like me, like getting up at 5 this morning to watch the 8 o'clock game last night because I couldn't get my child to sleep then. Fun time. So how did you get into basketball, and which team do you follow?
How I got into basketball, my descent into basketball, if you will, was very gradual. So I guess the very first point was rewatching Space Jam 100 times a day on videotape, you know, when I was a kid. And then my dad was a football supporter, like hardcore. So I was never really influenced by outside points in terms of basketball. The second step was when I went to Florida as maybe a 10 or an 11 year old, and we were out shopping in a mall, and I think it might have been a Foot Locker or something, and my parents were off looking at stuff. My sister was off looking at stuff, and I just kind of sat on this bench, and they have a TV on, and they were just showing these highlight plays and stuff. And I sat there for like an hour, just like transfixed by it. And then my parents came back and was like, "What have you been doing?" I just sat here, just watching. And that kind of planted the seed, if you will. And then it turned into an obsession, I'd say, when I was at university. And it was my final year and I wasn't really having a good time as often as the case sometimes at university, and you kind of, you know, sometimes you have mental health problems and all these kind of things, and it can be a tough period for people, and I wasn't sleeping much, and inevitably I found my way into watching basketball live all through the early hours of the morning, kind of stopped going to my lectures, all that stuff, which I don't advise, by the way. Go to your lectures, anyone watching out there, do your work. And that's where it really became like 24 hours a day. I was either reading about basketball or watching highlights, or, you know, actually trying to learn how to shoot a three pointer and all that kind of stuff, because I never really played it much as a kid. It was all a very delayed process. But then, you know, there was a point where I was watching games through the night, not sleeping, and getting up at 6 a.m. and going to the local park and like shooting around for a couple of hours every morning as the sun came up, and it was a nice period for me, actually. It kind of helped with all the other things going on. And in terms of the team that I follow, I'm a Houston Rockets supporter, but I say that quite loosely, as you can see. I'm not exactly rocking the colours at the moment.
For those who can't quite see it, it is a 76ers jersey. You can sometimes confuse those colours with Knicks fandom. You're not stupid enough to support the Knicks, are you?
I don't know. Knicks slander straight off the bat from you.
I don't know about that. They're having a good season, surprisingly so.
They are.
Fourth seed in the East. Yeah. I can't believe it. And a few weeks ago I was being slandered on here for suggesting they might be a play-in team, not even a playoff team. And, oh, well, I was right. They're doing better than that.
It is a bonkers season for them.
I actually have a bit of a soft spot for the Knicks because I'm still playing NBA 2K14, I think, and my career is with the Knicks. So with Carmelo and Stoudemire and all those guys. Nice. So it's a lot of fun. J.R. Smith, nice. You know, the classics.
I think it's quite interesting that you're way into the game, though, because like a lot of people, they especially on NBA Twitter at the moment, there's been this sort of chatter around, like, you know, whether you are, you know, a nerd and you're into the game, or like it's stats versus eye test sort of chatter. And it's like, and there's been a lot of like, you know, sort of dissent between the NBA players who play the game and people who play the game in rec league, or people who are just fans because they played it, you know, playing NBA 2K, which is how Matt Wellington, the founder of this website and this podcast, that's how he got into the game, really. And I think it goes to show that actually it doesn't matter how you get into basketball at all. Like, everybody, there's plenty of space for everybody, you know, all types of personalities, whether you're someone who has never played the game before and it just loves the nerdy sort of vibe of going on Basketball Reference and digging deep, or whether you just play it just a fan just because you watch 2K or play on 2K, or just because you watch, you know, late night games at 2 o'clock in the morning, or whether you just watch BBL games or whatever, you know, there's so much for so many people. And yeah, there's a lot of, even though for the most part, the NBA Twitter community and the NBA in the UK community is very welcoming, sometimes there can be this sort of like, oh, you're not an OG, you know? And it's just, I don't try not to subscribe to that way of thinking, because there's room for everybody, you know? It's, yeah. Well, welcome. welcome to the Double Clutch family.
No, it's a pleasure. I completely agree. I think it doesn't matter how you get into it. It just matters that you do. And then, you know, we're all here because we love the sport. We love talking about it. We love, you know, all the kind of nuance and depth to it. So yeah, I'm completely with you.
I think that's one of the keys to it as well, is that this has been sort of a bubbling subculture full of people complaining that it's not more popular. And weirdly, there's people who complain that when it gets more popular. Like, what do you think we can do as a community to grow the game in the UK and like push it more to the masses?
That is such a difficult question to answer, because I feel like,
sorry,
no. I mean, this is kind of what attracted me to the role at Sky Sports, because this is why I'm here as well. I really want to, you know, expand this great fan base we have in the UK as much as possible and kind of bring more people to the game. And yeah, I think about it all the time because all it took for me essentially was watching a few games live and that was it. I was hooked. It was as simple as that. Like I remember actually one of the first few games I sat through start to finish, and it was 2014, 2015 maybe, and it was a Rockets game against the Nets, and Kevin Garnett headbutted Dwight Howard, and they had a bit of a brawl, and Garnett got chucked out, and you know how can you not love the sport after witnessing something like that at like 3 a.m. in the morning, or you've got a lecture at 9 or whatever. So for me, all it took was watching a game, but I know for some people, they can't quite get into it that way. And a lot of my friends, I asked them, because I don't understand personally, like, why don't you love the NBA as much as I do? And they say they don't really know enough about the teams and the players and the kind of the narratives and so on. So I guess from my perspective, it's all about emphasizing those or bringing those to the fans in terms of our written content, our video content and so on. But in terms of the fan base and the community you've already got going, it's not like you guys are doing anything wrong, to be honest. It looks great from the
just
outside.
Keep doing it. Keep pushing it.
Yeah. We got Hoop Genius Mo Mootsy in the audience, and apparently he was at that game that you're talking about, watching it. At
no
the,
way.
The brawl. So yeah,
that's he gets everywhere. Cool. That man.
Yeah, Mo just keeps coming out with stuff to make me jealous. Like he was telling me on WhatsApp the other day about his that Lithuanian. The famous tie-dye t-shirt. He's got one of those.
He's got
one of those now somehow. Yeah, just incredible.
Yeah.
Mo, you're in the chat. Is that an original one from 92 or is it a remake one? I'm assuming based on the condition it looked new. He said drip or drown. anyway, okay, let's get on to some news. It broke today. Shams was breaking it. Joakim Noah is retiring, 13-year vet, ninth pick of the 2007 draft. He had an amazing 13-14 campaign. He obviously had a bit much bigger career, but his 13-14 campaign, 12.6 points per game, 11.3 rebounds, 5.4 assists for a center, finished fourth in MVP voting, won defensive player of the year, made the All-NBA team. In addition to that, he's made two All-Star teams and three All-Defensive teams. I don't think anyone was really shocked by this news. He's sort of bounced around in recent seasons. He had a stint on the Clippers last year, stint with the Grizzlies before. Kind of that 13-14 season, it all went downhill after then. What are your guys' takeaways from his career? Because he's obviously a phenomenal player at his prime. He just didn't really hang around long enough in terms of his peak being a longer period.
Well, I think I can't remember what year he was drafted, but that was quite late into his career already, wasn't it?
2007.
So he was already, but he stayed in college 3-4 years because they won those back to back championships in Florida, and I think they stuck around. Him and Alf Horford stuck around for an extra year, even though they were sort of seen as lottery picks, or they were seen as looking as if they were going to go in the first round. The thing that's amazing with Joakim Noah is that he hasn't actually got that much. I've got some friends who went over to Chicago. They're not big NBA fans. They went over to Chicago for a holiday and they thought, let's go watch a basketball game. And the crowd went nuts for Noah, went in the starting lineup announcements. And then he scored like 7 points. and they were like, why are they all cheering this guy? He sucks. But actually, the things that you see him do, it doesn't show up on a stat sheet and it doesn't show up in dominating a game in the traditional sense. He was someone who was able to lead his team to victory without scoring more than 6-7 points. He would do it with rebounds. He would do it with hard screen set, great defense. He was the guy who, he was a little Kevin Garnett-y in a way in his personality. He would be the guy who sort of brings the troops together, inspires the team to victory in an emotional sense. And I think that's underrated in many leaders. You know, you see a bit of Draymond Green in him today, you know, where he doesn't have to score much or dominate in any one area of the game, but he will lead a team to victory just by pure force.
I think the Draymond Green comparison is really, really nice, actually, because as well, Noah is really underrated as a passer and kind of, mm-hmm. you know, the offense used to run through him a lot, and he probably doesn't get the credit he deserves in terms of kind of the basketball intelligence and stuff he brought to the game. But then on the other hand, his jump shot was the ugliest thing in the history of the world. It always reminds me of like when you take like an oven tray out of the oven and you go for the risky approach, like a tea towel, and it's a bit too hot and you have to kind of chuck it away. That's always what it reminds me of. Honestly, I'm not ashamed to admit I used to hate Joachim Noah when he was playing, but then gradually he kind of softened and you kind of appreciate all the things he brought to the basketball court every time. It's not often you get a player of that, you know, passion and desire and commitment. So yeah, you respect him more and more as the years go on, I suppose, and you become a bit older and wiser yourself.
Yeah, I just think that so he had his peak season, and the next season was when the league completely changed and transformed, because the Warriors obviously went nuclear and then everyone flipped and tried to follow that style of basketball where a guy who hasn't got range, you know, despite his passing ability, he hasn't got range, he hasn't got handles, he hasn't got the versatility to hang around. That probably shortened his career much more quickly than it would have done had that ascension not happened. For some reason, we've got a picture of The Rock just appeared in the stream.
I think there's some chat about The Rock going on in the chat.
There's some weird stuff going on. Kirk's trolling us all. Someone's trolling us anyway. It kind of, you know, obviously the role of the big changed dramatically. Noah himself, like you say, incredible leader on the court and absolutely a Bulls legend. I like the idea of him retiring as a Bull, which has been mentioned. Yeah. Obviously, the Bulls have done that with a few other players as well. Obviously, it kind of brings his career full circle because Billy Donovan was his college coach as well, which is just a weird, you know, stroke of coincidence. Let's quickly move on. There were players of the week announced very soon, you know, very shortly before we went live. Devin Booker, 33 points, 4.3 assists, 53.8% field goal percentage, leading the Phoenix Suns to a 3-1 week. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 37 points per game, which is just disgusting. 10.7 rebounds, 5.7 assists, leading the Bucks 3-0. They've won five games straight now, having lost five games before that straight and won five games before that straight. So having a bit of a weird season, but he was absolutely on fire yesterday against the Clippers. What did you guys make of that? I'm assuming, you know, you both caught that game. How great is he being now? He's sort of rounding into form.
The thing with Giannis is, it's like, what can you say about him? It's a joke. I don't know. How would you describe him to someone who doesn't watch basketball? Like, I think it's impossible. And I was watching that game and tweeting along with it on the Sky Sports account. And he had the highlight play every 2 minutes. Like, it's just, it's impossible. And I think the thing with Giannis, and I wrote about it actually as well, it's just the joy that kind of watching him brings. Like, I don't know what it is.
He's got an innocence to him, hasn't he? Like, something off court that sort of highlighted it recently. I can't remember what day it was. It might have only been yesterday or maybe the day before. But one of the regular sort of pool reporters from Milwaukee, he was not on the beat anymore. And someone else was representing that newspaper. And he said, "Hey, where's that guy gone? He's normally always at the games." And you know, he actually mentioned him by name and said, "Oh, he should have said goodbye," you know. And like, NBA players don't do that. Like, they don't care about these, you know, journalists that follow them around from city to city. So, like, He's just got such a pureness to him as a human being that I think is so beautiful. And like, yeah, we talk about the MVPs back to back. I mean, we can break down his play of, you know, not being he's got another step to take, isn't he? Because at the moment, like, he can't necessarily be relied on at the moment to lead his team to a finals and to take that next step as a championship winner. But in terms of the next 5 years, I mean, LeBron might still be around in the next 5 years. He's such a machine. But when the torch does get passed to the next face of the league, it could very likely be him. And I think there is nobody better in the league in terms of their off-court persona, their likability on the floor, and the fact that he is just such an interest. Like you said, you can't describe him, you know, and he's someone who doesn't look anything like we've seen before. You know, it's fantastic to have someone like him as the face of the league. And yeah, I hope he gets over the hump. I think he will, because he's that gym rat, and he feels like he's a student of the game, you know, and he feels like he puts the work in. So I think he can take that next step. He just might need to wait until LeBron retires.
It's such a fantastic story, considering, you know, the circumstances around him being drafted, and that people kind of assume that because he was this project from Europe that he'd never really live up to the expectations and the hype. And then now he has, and he's arguably surpassed them, and he's this real, like, fully formed, almost superhero basically now. And as well, like, I think he deserves so much credit for sticking with the Bucks and kind of committing to the to the project there, even though it's the hardest route to a championship for him. I mean, I don't want to speak too soon. We don't know how it will end, whether, you know, it might turn sour in the future. But like you said, Hugh, given his character and what we've seen so far, I'd be very surprised.
I'm looking forward to, I don't know if you guys follow Mirren Fader. She did work for Bleacher Report, but now she writes for The Ringer. But she's been working on a book about Giannis Antetokounmpo. So, and I think you can pre-order it now. It's coming out in August, but that's going to be good, because Mirren Fader is she's like on, I've got three writers on a list that I will always read no matter what. And she's like, yeah, on that list. So, yeah, I would highly recommend checking that out when it arrives in the summer.
Well, this seems like an apt point to just jump ahead right to the end of the show, not closing it actually.
Oh, but, I see you.
we had a listener question that sort of follows this. So this was from Richard Fang. With the narrative of Bron, Embiid, or Dame winning the MVP this year, do you think it's unfair that Giannis's name is not in the names of that conversation?
It's unfair, but he's not going to win another one until he takes that next step. There's not a lot you can do more, really.
What? This winds me up. Why? It's a regular season award.
I'm completely with you, Mike, but it's
pissed me off so much. The narrative last year, they got bumped from the playoffs, and then basically the media went, and I say the media, I'm not pointing fingers at you two because it wasn't you two. You know, the wider NBA media just went, well, he's not winning another one because he can't lead him in the playoffs. It's like, it's a regular season award. What are you guys even talking about? He dominated the regular season, thoroughly deserved it. I just hate that narrative. Sorry.
No, I'm with you. You know, but you do need to see development. And the only area of development in his game is emotionally and spiritually and physically putting a team on his back and taking them to a level that they haven't reached. That's the only thing that's missing. Outside of a shot, he could possibly learn to handle a little bit better. His passing is improving. He's great in terms of passing out of double teams in the post these days. He's getting better always, but the one area, the one metric that matters at the moment is he going to take the next step in terms of actually winning? And I'm with you. The regular season should be the regular season. But
yeah, I get that from a legacy perspective, but I think from a regular season awards, it's a bit ridiculous. I totally get it. I don't think he'll get it this year, and I think that is not because of the offensive numbers he's putting up, it's because he's being used differently defensively. The Bucks are obviously limited practice times, they're trying new things out in games, it's not quite worked as well. We're starting to see it sort of click now, fingers crossed. But I just think, you know, you're talking about him putting a team on his back. They were down in the fourth last night, and then they rolled out a five that was him, Chris Middleton, then they had Drew Holiday. So, okay, fine. And then they played Pat Connaughton and Dante DiVincenzo against the Clippers side that was, well, let's go worst to best. So you had Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, or you could flip-flop them. They're still better than Dante DiVincenzo and Pat Connaughton. Then you had Serge Ibaka, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. It's kind of like he is putting the team on his back. Like, no, if I get why they've gone with those that five, because it spreads the floor. But if you had to pick out of those 10 players from best to worst, 9 times out of 10, I bet you're taking Connaughton and DiVincenzo as 9 and 10.
Mm. The other thing as well is Drew Holiday didn't really look like himself. So it's essentially just Middleton and Giannis.
Yeah, he's working his way back in, isn't he?
Yeah. No, I completely agree, Mike. And it does seem that this has been happening for years and years and years now, but the parameters for MVP seem to change every season. And it's the same thing that happened to LeBron. It's like voters get bored of someone winning it, you know, 3 times in a row or whatever. And
can I just jump in for a split second? Because you weren't aware of this before the show. People on Twitch can put in a word ban. So we've had a word ban for the 3-letter initialism representing the best person each regular season. Okay, does that make sense? So the award he's won twice in a row, mm-hmm. we can't say the name of it for the next few minutes. Sorry, I should really have warned you.
No one told me this. So
we can't. I don't know what the punishment is. Probably I have to do something stupid next week or something. But anyway, so carry on. We just can't say that. You're in the middle of saying.
Okay.
You know,
well, that's all I was talking about. So now I'm going to really struggle to go on here.
Just don't say the word. You can still talk about it. Just don't say the initialism.
Yeah. So with that particular award, it just seems, you know, it always seems to be a case of voter fatigue and people get tired of, and like I said, LeBron should have far more of those awards than he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he doesn't. And that's because people don't want to see the same person win it 3 times in a row. So yeah, I agree with you. I think he should be right up there with Embiid and Jokic, but it seems those two are the runaway favorites at the moment.
Yeah. I've noticed like a backlash of people also saying that it started with Harden last year saying he wasn't, you know, what he did wasn't skillful, which was just absolute trash because it is. I'm really standing for Giannis at the minute. But I kind of feel like he's getting the Shaq treatment where, you know, Shaq was the most dominant center for that period of NBA history, but he only won one of the unspeakable awards, which per Hoopin' and Lootin' was 99-2000. And he was largely criticized for just being physically dominant, despite the fact he had excellent footwork and had a tidy little baseline jump hook. And you got a guy here who's 6'11", playing as a guard. I mean, you talked about the difficulty you have explaining what he can do to anyone who's sort of new to the game. And it's just like, it's because it's never been done before. I just think people are too quick to...
That's the other funny thing as well, isn't it? You almost suffer for making it look too easy sometimes, and fans always have this counter argument. The same thing happened with Steph as well. It was like, oh, but he can shoot from anywhere. Of course, like he's going to win it. But that's the point. That's the point. It's like Harden draws fouls at this ungodly rate and can score in isolation whenever he wants. That's the point. Giannis can do everything you want on a basketball court. That's the point, you know. It's the reason for their greatness. So it's just, I don't know. People are never going to be happy, are they? They're always going to argue and rally against whoever ends up winning this award.
Yeah, no, I agree. It all keeps the clicks coming, I guess. We're going to flip it a little bit to some international news. FIBA and Twitch have signed a deal. The International Basketball Federation have announced a multi-year collaboration to bring more basketball content out over Twitch. FIBA will broadcast around 600 hours of live basketball games each year over its own Twitch channel, as well as other unique programming formats, which are specifically developed to leverage Twitch's unique interactive tools and features like the chat. And I'll be annoyed if they come out with a 2D pixelated 8-bit court. So I'm running that in the games. It's an interesting move. Obviously, the NBL in Australia have done something similar. They're playing games almost every morning. You're getting the notifications through at about 9-10 in the morning, which is really not conducive to working. The G League are obviously doing something similar. We've obviously had the Sky Sports Heat Check team have done watch-alongs as well. How do you see Twitch sort of changing the future of the way the NBA presents basketball?
I think it's already changed it, let's be honest. You know, the fact that us three now are having a conversation over Twitch, that wasn't happening this time last year. It was sort of unthinkable when we first started the podcast. It's excellent news. It's really great to see. I mean, we're going to get to see, presumably, we're going to get to see more opportunities to see these international games or overseas games and leagues in different countries. I think that's something that is missing from a lot of our, you know, enjoyment and knowledge gaps. You know, we see, I'm like you, Mike, I've been watching a lot of the Australian League the past few months because it's been on YouTube and it's because it's been on Twitch. If it's available, basketball heads are going to watch it. And I think only then are we going to sort of get a truly global game, in the sense that, you know, we've got a lot of players in Europe who can still play in the NBA. They just haven't been seen. We've got a lot of players in the NBA who might actually prefer to go and be a star and earn more money elsewhere rather than a 12th man, you know, in the NBA. You know, there's opportunities where we can sort of grow this, grow the game of basketball, even though it's already one of the biggest sports in the world. And actually, I think, you know, for a UK audience, you know, guys, if FIBA wants to give Double Clutch a shout, we've already got an operation up and running. You know, if you guys really want to throw some money at us, we can do
it. It's funny you say that, because we do know people we consume the show that work for FIBA Media. So if they are looking for, you know, a collection of geeks and nerds who love hoops, I know, I'm just pushing the cell a little bit further. You know, guys who know their short rolls and their double drags from their stunting and Xing out, then, you know, slide into our DMs, because, you know, we're available. But yeah, it's a really interesting perspective. They're allowing fans as well to produce FIBA-related content on their own Twitch channels, which is cool, because obviously, you know, before you've got usage rights and things like that. I mean, it's an incredible opportunity, and I obviously the NBA are doing it already with the G League, so they must be very closely looking at how they can use this for their own advantage as well. It is really something that I think could be big, and
I know a lot of people for the past 5 years have been talking, you know, the Bill Simmons of the world have been talking about how you know, Facebook and Amazon Prime are going to jump in and, you know, really buy up all the rights. I don't think it's necessarily going to be those guys. Well, they'll be in the bidding war, but it's going to
Amazon own Twitch.
Yeah. Exactly. That's, you know, but I think it's going to be these other non-prime platforms. You know, it's owned by the same subsidiary, but it's going to branch off and become its own thing, like Twitch and like, you know, YouTube, even though YouTube has been around longer, obviously. I think it's going to be these other platforms that are building up. And, you know, we spoke about it previously, but you've also got all these things like all these new places to see highlights. You know, I'm seeing basketball highlights on TikTok all the time. YouTube are launching their YouTube Shorts thing, which is going to be another TikTok style thing where you're going to find highlights on those more easily accessible. You know, there's new platforms that we can't even sort of wrap our minds around yet that I think are going to be part of these bidding wars rather than just, you know, putting them as a live stream on Facebook. There's more things to come that we can't even think about right now.
Kyle, do you think that the future of sports viewing is going to involve more interactive sort of programming, I guess?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The example I was going to use, and I don't want to go on too much of a tangent, but is with the world of chess at the moment, and that is absolutely massive on Twitch. Like, I think all the top streamers and stuff are all chess players, and not even like the grandmasters. They're just pure streamers and fans of the game. And I can see a very similar thing happening with basketball, and that's what I hope for. At the end of the day, like, the more people who can easily watch a game, the better. Like, that's all you want, really. You don't want these blockades and stuff up for, you know, subscription prices. And, you know, if it's like, it, like, for instance, it's absolutely amazing that you two are now watching Australian basketball. I wish I had the time to join in with that. But yeah, the more people who can view and kind of interact and you know share the love, then the better.
But of course, for anyone watching and listening, Kyle, you know, you being an official full-time employee of Sky Sports now, we must, of course, say that Sky Sports is the best place to watch it, of course, isn't it?
That goes without saying. Yeah. I didn't realise that, to reiterate that. But if you don't do that already, then what are you doing, honestly? You can please get in touch and I will convince you otherwise.
Okay, so let's move on. So in the past week, LeBron James and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who despite my absolutely terrible knowledge of football, I somehow remember from, didn't he score a spectacular goal against England once? And I also remember him being quite good on PES 5, despite the fact he had like a 40 on pace. That's not literally my knowledge of him. But he's sort of, it was in an interview with Discovery Plus in Sweden, and he felt compelled to criticise, this is per The Guardian, the LA Lakers star, and any sports person who dares to use their position and platform to speak out on issues beyond the narrow focus of the sport they play. So I like James a lot, Ibrahimovic said. He's phenomenal, but what he's doing, what I don't like when people with the status... Hold on. He's phenomenal, what he's doing, but I don't like when people with a status speak about politics. Do what you're good at doing. I play football because I'm best at playing football. I'm no politician. If I'd been a politician, I would be doing politics. This is the first mistake famous people do when they become famous. For me, it is better to avoid certain topics and do what you're good at doing. Otherwise, you risk doing something wrongly. So this is just mad, really, in my opinion. I imagine we're all on the same page here completely in that Zlatan's in the wrong here. I mean, what LeBron has done, I mean, we've done this last year. We've spent the whole we spent the last year talking about the social issues, and how this guy can be so unaware of the importance of it is kind of beyond me. But what was your reaction to this, Kyle? It's obviously a, I mean, you've got a bit of a football background. You know more about Zlatan than I do. What was your reaction to this?
Yeah, it's just tiring, isn't it? Like, it's just another shut up and dribble moment where, I mean, to be honest, you kind of expect it from Zlatan. He kind of makes his you know, personality these days with these sound bites and things. And you have to take what he says with not just a pinch, but like a truckload of salt, essentially. As Jonathan Liu pointed out in his really good column about it earlier today, he said that Zlatan once said that Muhammad Ali was his favourite athlete because of what he did inside and outside the ring. So straight away, it's just, you know, the obvious contradiction there. And Zlatan as well, like, he had a difficult upbringing. He, you know, he suffered from kind of racism when he was growing up because obviously his dad was a Bosniak Muslim in Sweden. So it was difficult for him. And, you know, they were a poor family and they were kind of outsiders in that world in Malmo. So it's not just surprising, it's disappointing as well. And look, as people rightly pointed out on Twitter, there's an absolute chasm of difference with what LeBron James does with his platform and what Zlatan does. Zlatan posts memes about being a lion. The man's nearly 40 years old. Like, it's just he cannot say anything. LeBron has impacted so much and done so much good in this world that It's laughable, to be honest, that someone like Zlatan Ibrahimovic, as good as a footballer he is daring to criticise him. And there's kind of an irony there as well, like, stick to what you're good at. And maybe what Zlatan should be good at is just being quiet for once. I don't know.
Well said.
Yeah. I don't think I've got anything to top that. I think, yeah, we're... With the NBA and the WNBA as it is, they've been at the forefront of social issues. They've been probably the best league in the world on it. That is up for debate because there's other leagues in the world who do a lot of good work as well. But certainly from our perspective, with my limited knowledge of sports outside of basketball, I only see the NBA as being the leader in this sort of race. The thing is that even if not everybody in the NBA is as politically in tune as LeBron James is. LeBron James has gone out of his way to do it, I think, in many respects, partly because I think it's been forced on him a little bit because he is the face of the league, but also he has a great interest in it. So Zlatan can say, you should stick to what you're good at. Yes, he's arguably the greatest basketball player of all time, but there are more facets to people's personalities and people's lives and people's interests and knowledge bases than just being this physical presence on a basketball court. You can have actors who are into politics. You can have basketball players who are into singing. You can have football players who also like, I don't know, what are football players like?
you have Marcus Rashford at the moment. He's taken real steps in child poverty. Yeah, not that he like he likes the opposite of child poverty, which is kids being fed. You know,
but he's passionate about it. You can have passions outside of what you are, you know, good at as a sport. And there's, you know, I follow basketball, but I also enjoy I also enjoy music. I'm not going to just tweet about basketball all the time. When the Six Nations are on, I'm gonna tweet about the Six Nations, even though, you know, I'm more known for tweeting about basketball. It's stupid and idiotic to think that he can only focus on one thing at a time, and it's ignorant, really.
I find it interesting that people need to take shots at him to try and build their own credibility or you know, just following in some way, because even when he doesn't say anything, they'll still come at him. Because if we remember China, which was was that 2019, fall of 2019, when Daryl Morey obviously put the tweet out about Free Hong Kong's, the uproar whilst the teams were in China, and LeBron was asked for his opinion and made the decision to say, well, I don't know enough about it to make an informed statement. And then he got torn to shreds for that. It's just like, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
He's also in the political race last year in the States. He has become this almost this whipping boy of the left. He is seen as so anti-Republican that, sort of Republican websites and commentators and meme artists, you know, say, sort of make things up saying, you know, what does LeBron think about it? You know, that's the only position Democrats are going to have, you know. So I can understand why people get upset, because if they represent a political party and they represent the opposite political party or whatever, I can understand why people, you know, will argue political views. But when it comes to humanitarian views and let's be honest, LeBron James is only going to speak up on the really important humanitarian matters like racism, like education, like voter reform. You know, these are giving people a voice and giving people a say in how the world is run. And I don't think I think if you're not on board with the type of things LeBron James speaks out publicly for, then I think you're probably doing something wrong in your own life, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fair. Let's move on to something significantly more lighthearted. It's the All-Star weekend this weekend. Well, I say weekend, it's All-Star Sunday this Sunday, because we've not got a weekend, we've got one night. And you can think what you want about that, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. The replacements the replacement for AD was announced within 23 hours. It is the Western Conference Player of the Week, Devin Booker, who obviously took the snub to heart and went and lit the league alight. In the East for Kevin Durant, it's Domantas Sabonis. But apparently, it might have been Jimmy Butler. Did you guys catch this story? Reports are that the spot was offered to Jimmy and he said he would only go if Bam went. If that's true, and I hope it is, because I think that's amazing. I love the whole, you know, I'm only going if my teammate's going. I love that side of things. What did you guys make of that particular story?
Yeah, I love it too. Jimmy, honestly, I might as well come clean. I have a bit of an obsession with Jimmy Butler, and it started when I went to a Sixers game a couple of seasons ago, and I was in the locker room, fortunately enough to be in the locker room, and he was just strolling around in a towel singing and dancing, and like he didn't have a care in the world, and it was so refreshing to see. And since then, I mean, you've probably read the GQ profiles and so on. His personality is quite something. And that music's very appropriate. This is a love affair. It's very one way. Unfortunately, it's not reciprocated yet, but one day. So yeah, I love it too. Like he's sticking up for his teammate. And maybe you can say, okay, Jimmy's been there five times, I think, before. Maybe he doesn't care as much. But I don't know. It to me, it sends all the right messages, especially when you've got all the past with Jimmy, where you know he's in Timberwolves and on the Timberwolves, and he was, you know, having those clashes in practice and so on, where maybe people were kind of thinking, is he all that great in the locker room? But now clearly he's demonstrating that he is.
That's what I was thinking about when Mike was talking about him, because like he is such a dichotomy, isn't he? Like I hated him so much for the, let's face it, he was bullying the guys in Minnesota and he was, you know, really laying into to Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins.
Be careful what you say here, Hugh, by the way. Be careful. I have Jimmy's back no matter what.
But he was an absolute dick. I wrote an article about how he was...
Why? For saying that you MFers need me and then beating the starters with the third stringers. How is that bullying? Yeah,
that's just...
That's like saying that David was the bully because he killed Goliath. They've got, you know, he's the star and this is the I've got the third string and I'm the bully because I won.
I think, okay, the on-court stuff, that's just Jimmy being Jimmy. Some of the off-court things that he said was actually, I think, inappropriate. And I think a lot of NBA Twitter felt the same at that time. You know, these days he's a damn hero because he took the Heat to the finals and he is this great character and he's this, you know, there are some amazing sides to his personality, but he was a dick. I think I like
can only
him.
Be one in the chat has said, was Jimmy so far removed from Jordan's behavior who is lauded?
That's a very good point.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. I think we don't hear about it. We didn't hear about Jordan as much. I think if we had social media today, and Jordan's even addressed this himself, if we had social media today, we would not be as enamored. Thank you. With Jordan as we are, because he's this mythological creature. But like, I liken what Jimmy Butler does now, and here it comes for anyone who plays Double Clutch Twitch Bingo. I liken it to sort of the Attitude Era of the WWE in the late 90s. because at that time, you know, you had your traditional faces and your traditional heels. And I think in that Attitude Era, it was defined by like D-Generation X being heels, but everybody liking them. So it was, you know, he is a heel, but he is just so likable that you want to cheer for him anyway, even when he rock bottoms your favorite, you know, player through a table.
I wasn't a wrestling fan. A lot of that's lost on me. I don't know anything about the Attitude Era.
And yes, it is Krabby's, if someone was asking in the chat.
What, is that alcohol-free ginger ale?
No, it's a rhubarb version.
Excellent. Let's move on. Okay, so there will be a dunk contest, rumoured to have three participants. Hugh, is there anyone in particular you would like to see in the dunk contest?
Okay, so... We've got to have...
Just give me one, because we're running long on time. Let's go with one. Give me who we have got to have.
We need... Oh, but if we got to have him... Oh.
Pick one. Someone's probably going to pick the other one.
Okay, I'm hoping that someone will pick the other one. We need to have one, like, big man dunker. We need Zion.
Okay. That'll be interesting. I hope he does it. I doubt he will. Kyle, who would you pick to be in the dunk contest?
It's got to be Anthony Edwards so far for me. The man's just catching bodies week in, week out. I want to see him in the dunk contest. I also want to see Zion, but I'm scared that he'll just hurt himself and I'd feel terrible. So, you know, swings and roundabouts for that.
That is the fear.
Yeah.
I mean, Anthony Edwards' stock has just flown through the roof since that. Just oh, wow. I can't even put it into words. That's indescribable what he did.
The thing is, there's a big difference between an in-game dunker and a dunk contest dunker. Yeah. But, you know, I think with him it could translate pretty well. I hope so anyway.
And I've just gone nice and easy for this and I've taken Zach LaVine. Yeah. I only want him in there if he does the free throw 360 he teased us with last year. Because that's just going to... I would say it's going to send the place, you know, I don't even know if there's going to be fans there. So it might just be really weird seeing him dunk in front of no one and then...
The thing is with Zach LaVine is that personally, we need to reduce the amount of people that actually go into All-Star Sunday because, you know, we can't have a massive outbreak. So he's already going to be there. That's just...
Well, that's he wouldn't do it last year if he wasn't an All-Star. Yeah.
Could get him in the three-point contest as well.
Well, let's go through the three-point contest. Kyle, who would you pick to see in the three-point contest?
I want to see Dwight Howard in the three-point contest. I'm being deadly serious. Because I think what that does, it works on two levels. First of all, it's really entertaining. And I think Dwight would do it because he's that kind of personality. Second of all, it puts a lot of pressure on the other competitors that they do not want to lose to Dwight Howard. And sometimes... Even good shooters can kind of not really find their rhythm and hit single digits. So I just think it'd be really funny if Dwight Howard like beat one of them. Can you imagine? Oh,
that'd be amazing.
I think that the event would be entertaining. I'm not sure watching Dwight Howard
as well.
put up 25 bricks.
He can hit the odd corner three. I don't know. I reckon he'd score about five.
I'm checking. I want to check this now because I think he's doing okay. From that distance,
I've gone for a slightly similar approach, but less ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I've gone with Chris Boucher, who horrible form, mm-hmm. but somehow shooting 44.7%, and there probably needs to be someone from the Raptors there. I'd rather there wasn't a potential super spreader event, you know, unnecessary teams there. But it's weird not having a Toronto Raptor represented at the All-Star game. Mm.
I'd like to see Joe Ingles because he is going to trash talk the hell out of everybody.
And we might get picked up on the mics as well because no one there, no crowd noise. Okay, so let's move on to Nick's silly nonsense.
Nothing but Nick's silly nonsense.
Okay, so he's not here this week, but Nick says, I like video games far more than a 36-year-old man should. Over the years, there have been some incredible bad guys and girls that occupy the villain spot in big games. My question to you is, if you had to pick a video game villain to become a real-life person to play in the NBA, who are you choosing and which team are you putting them on and why? Kyle, I'm going to come to you first.
I'm going to go with Oddjob from GoldenEye as my villain. And the reason for that is because... Obviously, he was a cheap player because he was half the size of every other character. Even though the actor who played Oddjob in real life was like a respectable 5'10", still too small for the NBA, but I'm going video game Oddjob, who's, 3 foot tall instead. And I'm torn on what team. I wanted to put him on the Nets as kind of rotation center with DeAndre Jordan, but I'm actually now leaning towards the Pelicans and have him play the entire game on like Steven Adams' shoulders. that's my answer. I thought about this a lot, and that's what I'm going with.
I remember in GoldenEye, it was like you couldn't hit him if he was crouched.
Exactly. It's impossible to hit.
If he had the golden gun and he was crouched, it was just game over.
Yeah, the creators actually said he was cheating to use him, which I think is hilarious. But yeah, I'd like to see him on a basketball court. See what he's got.
So, awesome. Hugh, who have you got?
So long-time Twitter followers of mine will know how big a fan I am of the LucasArts game Monkey Island. And the main evil character in that was the ghost pirate LeChuck. And he was a pretty tall character. He had a flaming beard and... He was, he was a pretty athletic dude. Some of the jumps that he could do to sort of run after you and things like that. And, he was pretty nifty in a sword fight. I think he would be, I think he'd sort of be a bit Zion-like. But, when I was previously thinking of it, I was thinking Charles Barkley. But to bring it to the modern age, probably, a bit more like Zion. Or maybe Dwight Howard of about 10 years ago, he had that sort of ferocity, in his athleticism, but maybe Dwight Howard's too nice a guy. But yeah, that's what I would go with. Ghost Pirate LeChuck.
So we've gone for a similar style of player, I think, in terms of, that big physical presence, but I've gone way back to 1992 and the same team that created NBA Jam might have, they put out a well-known game called Mortal Kombat. And in that is Goro, who has four arms, 0% body fat, is 8 foot two, 563 pounds, which is the equivalent of 40 stone. So he's a big dude with four arms. He's basically Zion point 300.
But Mike, can he Can he defend the pick and roll? That's the question.
He's got four arms. What do you want him to do? If he just edges, he's 8 foot two.
I don't know.
Giannis at 6'11" can cover 8 feet in a single step.
It's all about foot speed.
Would it be more like...
That's true.
That's the thing. He sounds like more of a Boban at the moment, unless he's got the athleticism.
Athleticism? You've never played Mortal Kombat.
I can't remember that character.
I am worried about his age. I am worried about his age because I'm pretty sure he's like a weird dragon Shaolin hybrid thing. So it's probably hundreds of years old.
So it's going to be more like Dirk in those final years then?
Possibly, because before Mortal Kombat, the game, in the timeline it's set, why am I doing this? He won 9 Mortal Kombats. So he must have been around for a long time. So he could have suffered injuries. Who knows what he's carrying? I worry that might affect his longevity on the court, along with the fact he's 40 stone. But still, four arms. It's just genius.
Hard to argue that, really, to be honest.
But let's move on again quickly. Talking on D, our discourse on Discord. Go and join our Discord community, discord.me/doubleclutch. We had chats this week on Mr. Laker. Would you guys pick anyone particular to be, you know, who you think is Mr. Laker in your eyes?
I think the top three, Magic, Kobe, and Kareem. I think you can rule out Kareem because he wasn't an original Laker. So it comes down to Magic or Kobe. I think that for this generation, it's absolutely Kobe. I think some people in this generation might not appreciate, you know, or be aware of how much Magic meant to that city and that team. You know, he was the Lakers. And it's to the point where, you know, they brought him back 6 years after he had retired because they wanted him back in a Laker jersey. And they even let him coach the team, even though he had no coaching experience. And they let him GM the team, even though he had no GMing experience. So I think he is it's a tough one and two. I'd probably give the nod to Kobe simply because, you know, the recency bias, but also the longevity and the fact that, you know, he won 5 championships there. He's deserving of it.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there. We've had some breaking news whilst we're on the stream. Adrian Wojnarowski, Atlanta have dismissed Lloyd Pierce as head coach, expecting assistant Nate McMillan to step up and cover the role. Shout out to Tom Hall 789, one of our co-hosts who is in the chat and has just alerted me to it. So obviously the Hawks started the season 4-1, been decimated by injuries. They're now 14-20. Are you surprised that the axe has fallen at all on Lloyd Pierce?
I'm going to have to go and write this up, guys. I'm going to have to get off now.
That's fine.
I am a bit surprised, yeah, but then in a way they've really been underperforming, especially considering the moves they made in the offseason. I think expectations were ramped up maybe slightly prematurely with the Hawks, considering, you know, what this team are. They're still a very young team, and Trae Young, as good a player as he is, he's not the finished article. I don't think he's ready to carry a playoff team. But yeah, I guess I am surprised. I don't know. Maybe it's come a bit too soon. Maybe end of the season was a better time for it.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I get that they were not all in, but they were pushing this season for the playoffs. So maybe there's some internal friction with Trae Young, because obviously he's not been happy with losing before. Mm. Obviously, there's been issues with John Collins this year, but, you know, Bogdanovich's injury, that's horrific. Gallinari's missed time. They've had loads of players out. Cam Johnson's out at the minute. It's Cam Johnson? My mind's gone completely blank there. I think he was...
Cam Johnson is sudden.
Completely blank from it.
No, I'm thinking... seriously, Kyle, if you do need to get off
Cam
to
Reddish,
go write
you
this
go.
Up...
yeah, no, if you need to get off...
I was joking.
I was like, oh God, he's serious. I'm running on. No. I just thought they'd have bought him some time to the end of the season at least, and I'm not sure that bringing Nate McMillan's going to come in and do what he's done at every other franchise that he's been at, which is improve the defense but stall the offense.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I think the team, from my opinion of the situation is that Trae Young and Luka Doncic are going to be linked forever, sadly. I feel that there was a bit of a, Luka Doncic is already having a lot of success. He's basically going to be on a playoff-bound team next season. We need to... I don't know whether Trae made it known that that's what he wanted to happen, but it certainly seemed as if they tried to build a playoff-contending team straight away. He's not ready to lead a team of veterans yet. I think they put the team together really badly. Him and... John Collins, him and John Collins should have been together for the next 5 to 10 years. The fact that they brought in someone else, Clint Capella, who, you know, really takes up a lot of that space that John Collins was filling, that's not a good look. And I think it sort of possibly threw off the chemistry. It's thrown off the shape of the team a little bit. I think they've made a couple of bad moves here in the past. I mean, I don't think too much of Lloyd Pierce, but equally, I don't think he's really had the same team from one season to the next to be able to actually, you know, build something with momentum. And I think that's a shame, because I think people were high on him when he first came into the job. I don't know a huge amount about Lloyd Pierce, but people seemed excited by him getting the job.
It's definitely something odd going on, because I think it's a weird time to do it, you know, just before the All-Star break. Like, you could assess things over the All-Star break and talk to everyone, you know, talk to all the parties involved, understand what's happening and work out if something is salvageable. It just seems quite odd to me. But 14 and 20, they're not that far out of it.
Only three games away from the Knicks.
Of the fourth seed.
I think you mentioned it, Mike. It does feel like it's been done to appease either Trae Young or John Collins, or, you know, to kind of rectify what's probably become a bit of a toxic dressing room.
Yeah.
Oh, well, they'll get Nate McMillan in there, respected NBA lifer. Let's go on to some quick questions. I'll say quick questions, then never quick. Tommy Jr. said, if every moment in NBA history was put on Top Shot, what would be the most expensive? I'm going with Blocked by James or The Last Shot. Are you both familiar with Top Shot?
Yeah.
Vaguely. I'm not 100% sure what it is yet, but I think I've got a grasp of it.
Basically, it's what my whole life has become in the past 3 weeks. It is digital NBA cards, which have small, like short highlight videos instead of a the Jordan card I pulled out before the show. And it's basketball trading cards meets cryptocurrency. So basically, you pull a pack, or you buy a card off the market, and it is a certain player of a certain rarity and has a supposed value. So what do you think, you know, an NBA moment in history would be some of these cards are going for $203,000. So what do you think would be the most expensive valued card in Top Shot? That was a really poor way of explaining
I think Tommy's right, though. I think it's probably the Last Shot, isn't it? That's probably going to be the most expensive of all time. But I think if we're going to, you know, look at everything else in sequence after that, you know, I think that's possibly going to be the top dog, and then there's everybody else.
I don't think it will be.
But what else could it be?
Well, see, I'm 36, and I'm a Jordan stan, but a lot of people my age are not comprehending or understanding the point of Top Shot, because it's not a tangible thing you can hold in your hands. It's a digital thing. They're like saying, well, what is the point? So I think then you've got the generational gap where the next group, the digital era of people, are more into LeBron James. He's their GOAT. So I think his value would be pushed up more than Jordan's, especially when you take into the context the fact that the last shot wasn't his last shot, unless you're talking about the free throw in Philadelphia when he played for the Wizards. So I think there's that needs to be taken into account. But for me, I think it would be Kobe's last shot.
Yeah.
Because that moment, he 31 seconds to go, hits the long two, coming off a Julius Randle screen, And then the camera pans to him celebrating. And then also, and like, this is like, I went and watched the clip back earlier because I thought it's got to be this. And I got goosebumps watching it because then it pans to Gigi as well and the whole family. And I was just like, that, if they put, I don't think they would, out of respect, I think they wouldn't do it. But if that was a top shot moment, I think that is where it would just go.
Yeah, either that or the championship winning shot. No, it wasn't the championship winning shot. I think it was against the Suns where he curls off the screen off the top and sort of shoots a fadeaway very long two and turns and pumps his fist with his sort of like his teeth clenched. That's quite a famous one as well. I mean, for me, it would be the,
Ray Allen?
I mean, no, it wouldn't be that one. I think, it's difficult, actually.
It is difficult. Carl, is there any moment in mind that springs out to you that would be...
The first one was the LeBron chase down block on Iguodala, like it has to be. But I think personally speaking, if there was a card I could have, maybe I'm misunderstanding, but if there's a card I could possess more than any other, I'd want DeAndre Jordan's dunk on Brandon Knight.
If Brandon Knight.
That's the one basketball clip I could watch every day for the rest of my life and not get tired of even slightly. Like that's
you haven't misunderstood it either. They could absolutely do that. They would literally just clip that dunk and it's just that is a thing of beauty.
Yeah, what can you say? I mean, Brandon Knight actually looked like he was dead for a few seconds, which is
speaking of
he was like holding his chest.
Like another similar dunk on. One is LeBron James playing for the Miami Heat on Jason Terry. That was that was a painful
one. That was savage
one.
As well.
Oh, yeah. There's so many. I guess that's the point of this.
They can continue to print money, basically. Mm. But we're going to get into Top Shot more next week. Both Tom Hall and I have got a pack coming each, and we'll rip the packs next week and see what we've got. So make sure you tune in for that one. Next question from Elliot Hooping and Looting. A couple of weeks ago, I shared my delight in these are such English questions. A couple of weeks ago, I shared my delight in indulging in some Wensleydale and cranberry cheese. This evening, I was introduced to Wensleydale and apricot cheese, which was delightful and led me to the following question: which duo in NBA history brought you the most delight? Not necessarily the most successful, but the most satisfying to watch. P.S. If the crew should be provided with some cheese tasters whilst answering this question live, that would be great. So if anyone's got any cheese, feel free to crack on with it now. No one's got cheese.
I have no cheese, unfortunately. No. Now I feel ashamed.
I have, but it's weirdly, you won't look like cheese because it's... it stinks though, because it's reasonably well known on this pod that I enjoy steaks and things. But what's not reasonably known well known is that I've basically been plant based for about 18 months, and I only have steaks on special occasions. So that is a coconut feta cheese thing, which I brought just in case, just to eat it. But now I'm not going to. And I could have had it on my jacket potato earlier. So, which NBA duo brought you the most delight, not necessarily the most successful? Carl, I'll come to you first.
This is where I unfortunately do get a bit Rockets fanboy, and I'm going to go Corey Brewer and Josh Smith, and it's in
that's
particular
deep.
That series against the Clippers where they just turned into the world's best basketball players for some reason over the course of half a game. And that was probably the most ridiculous game I've ever seen. And watching Josh Smith turn into Steph Curry for 10 minutes was a delight, honestly.
Yeah, go back and kill the Clippers, just like the team you come from. That's a really good reach, actually. I didn't even think of it in the context of just being a single series or moment. I went much longer. I made a list because I can't pick, but I'm going to pick one of them. And I'm going to say Jason Williams and Chris Webber, who weren't together for a super long time, but flashy, nice 1-2 punch. I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I had about 8 written out just in case. Hugh, who have you got?
So I like I like your standard cheeses. I like, you know, everyday cheeses. I'm a big cheddar fan. Have it basically on everything. But I do like the occasional rare cheese. I will try it. And sometimes I won't be that fussed with it, but I'll be like, well, I'm glad I tried it. Deron Williams and Carlos Boozer.
And the Jazz.
When they were with the Jazz, they basically recreated Stockton Malone about 10 years later. And it was actually kind of a delight to see those old ways, those old pick and rolls still working really well, even with, like, you know, poor men version of Stockton and Malone. But I don't just like cheese. I also like it with crackers and I like it with a bit of chutney. So it's got to be Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker. Just as a threesome.
That's just cheating, first of all. It's three players. And I mean, I don't know where to start with that. The biggest takeaway from that here, that answer, was that if Carlos Boozer was a cheese, he'd probably be this, like, stinking, rancid, blue, French, like, just this horrible, veiny blue cheese that no one wants. Yeah,
and then have to cover it in, like, a black wax all the time when he's freeing his hair.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Cool. All right. Let's finish with games of the week because we have run long. Apologies for keeping you, Carl. Did you have a particular game you would recommend people watch this week?
Yes, absolutely. And it's purely coincidence. It's the one we're showing live on Sky Sports Arena and main event on Wednesday night, which is Houston Rockets against the Brooklyn Nets. And the reason I picked this is because the Houston Rockets are terrible at the moment. Let's just be honest about that. When I looked at John Wall's box score from last night, he had no rebounds and no assists and 10 points, and just the shooting percentages were hideous. Like, I almost fainted. And the reason I picked this is because James Harden is playing insane basketball at the moment. I really feel like he's going to put in a performance. Like, he's going to put on a show, and I'm dreading to think what his numbers are going to be at the end of the game. Hopefully it stays relatively close so we don't get a garbage time situation where he subs him out. But I feel like it's a 50-pointer potentially.
Yeah.
I'm hoping so.
I was completely with you for all the same reasons. Going up against his old team, he's going to want to embarrass them, let's be honest.
Yeah.
So my second choice was was the Toronto versus Boston game a bit later in the week on the Friday, I think it is, or maybe it's the Friday morning and the Saturday morning and the Friday night. These two teams, they've basically underperformed so far this year, and they really need to build up some momentum. They've both sort of been battling in the bottom four of the playoffs, and even Boston sitting outside the playoffs now. We need to see something from both of these teams. You know, one is only 2 years removed from a championship. The other should have been contending for a championship both of these past 2 years. We need to see something from them, and I think that's going to be a good battle in the East to maybe determine who gets into the playoffs, or certainly determine playoff seeding when we get a bit closer to the time. This could be an important one. That's also on Sky Sports Arena, by the way.
Nice.
I feel like I've wronged you now because I've not picked one that's on Sky Sports Arena, and I usually do because the one I go for is a weekend game that's a respectable hour that I might be able to watch. But I've gone Wednesday night, the battle of the number one seeds, Jazz at Philadelphia. Don't really need to say more than that. It's going to be, you know, Gobert versus Embiid, and just two teams that are really flying at the minute. Thanks to everyone for dropping in tonight. Thank you, Carl, for joining us. Do you want to tell people where they can find you? Online, obviously.
On Twitter, it's just my name, so at Kyle Picknell, and just the Sky Sports NBA page. Keep checking it. We have great stuff on there daily, features from myself and you and so much more. So, yeah.
Awesome. And thank you for all the follows we've had. We've had on Discord this week, we've had a few people drop in recently. Kay Basker, Justin Quinn, and Lil Booker have all joined up. If you're following on Twitch, don't forget you can also subscribe for free if you have Amazon Prime, and then Kirk will make you a custom avatar. We've got a Fat Harden, we've got a Zion, I've got a Red Panda, which is just a thing of beauty. If you're not already following us, make sure you are at Double Clutch UK, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Come join the Discord, as I mentioned, discord.me/doubleclutch. If you missed us live, your loss. It's been a lot of fun. You can listen back on all audio podcast providers, but we are here every Monday, 9 p.m, twitch.tv/doubleclutchuk. Thank you once again for joining us, Kyle. We will see you guys again next week.
Peace.